Think that you've heard everything about Atlantis? Well, hold on to your butts, because we may be presenting some new ideas on this episode.
Alien Podcast, Episode 17, Atlantis.
On tonight's episode, we're going to be talking about Atlantis. Now, Paul, what are your thoughts on Atlantis?
Not quite sure what it is, if it was actually real or if it wasn't, where it is, where it was. You know, a lot of people think that it was just a myth, that it wasn't actually real, but I just don't know. I'm not quite sure on this one. This is probably one of the toughest ones we've talked about so far, as far as having a side of the fence to come down on, I think.
Yeah, it is pretty difficult. I know a lot of people actually consider Atlantis to be completely fiction or pseudo-history. But when I take a look at it, you know, you're talking about from a couple of thousand years ago is where the story of Atlantis originates. And I personally take a look at places like the city of Troy. They thought that Troy was a mythical place or a pseudo history until sometime in the 1800s when it was actually discovered. So I say, yeah, there's a very good possibility that there could be something like Atlantis to have existed at one time.
You know, as far as if it existed or not, what do you make of Atlantis itself? I mean, was it a nation of itself? Was it just an island city? Or, it's hard to figure out what is what with that. And did it sink into the ocean? Was it destroyed by something else?
I think that it was actually destroyed by the ocean, but I don't think that it was a separate continent. I don't think it actually sank into the ocean. I'm going to present some ideas on this show that basically what I think is, I think that Atlantis is in plain sight. It's been somewhat hiding in plain sight in Western Africa for quite a while now. And in fact, the first time that it was discovered was in the 1960s when we started putting people in space. That was the first time anyone had ever noticed it, because when you look at it from ground level, it basically just blends in with everything else because there's no longer any water around it. Of course, there's no longer water inside of it. But it very well matches the description that Plato and Solon gave of it. Of course, Solon was the first one to really talk about it, and that's where Plato got his work from.
Right. And there's a lot of places that people think that it might be in plain sight. And after a lot of the stuff that I've looked at, I think a lot of the ideas of the Madeira Islands, I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. I'm sure you've heard of the capital city of Funchal. I'm sure you've heard of that before.
Yes.
When you look at it, the size of the island isn't very large, but it's big enough to support something like Atlantis. It's also got the weather to support the people of Atlantis, not to the point where they'd have a harsh winter or anything like that. But the other thing is that if you look at what was written, you know, there was the Greeks had some sort of a war with Atlantis. And I think for that to have happened, you had to have had something fairly near to Greece for that to have happened.
There is a checklist. God, I cannot remember the name of the Atlantis historian who come up with this checklist. It has 51 items on it that he says that make up the entire description of Atlantis. One of the things that he had on there was it was within 5,000 kilometers of Athens.
When you think, can't have something that's going to be too far away from other things. I mean, you know, if you're going to attack some other nation, at least back then, you know, you've got to be fairly close because travel might not have been the easiest thing to do. I'm just not sure. There's a lot of different things that have to happen for some of that stuff to happen. And this is a tough subject for me. It just really is because it's just because there is no evidence of anything really. So you're just not sure what is what, you know? I mean, it's difficult to figure out what, of course, I'm sitting here just bumbling like an idiot. It's a subject that's very tough to kind of wrap the human mind around. I mean, because you've heard so many different theories of this and how it happened, what happened to it, and who destroyed it, why it was destroyed. You hear all of that, but it's really hard to put your finger on any one of them that could quite possibly make sense.
Some people even think that it's off the coast of Florida somewhere. With Bimini Road, they think that somehow that's maybe connected to it. There's all kinds of theories about it.
Yeah, I don't buy that one. I think that one would be way too far away for anybody to have even known about, especially back at that time. Because you're looking at Plato's writings were from thousands of years ago. And I just don't think, over the course of that time, I guess you could have had maybe like some kind of tectonic plates shifting or whatever. I just think that that's too far for that to have even happened either. I think where the island you're either looking for is either in the Mediterranean Sea or just outside of it.
There again, that's one of the things that's in the list of 51 items as a possibility is it has to be outside of the Pillars of Hercules, which is actually the Straits of Gibraltar.
Right.
They know it's somewhere outside of that. When you draw that 5,000 kilometer radius around Athens from that point, it really puts you in a very limited area as to where it could be. Plato wrote about Atlantis within the Critias and Timaeus writings, and it contained information which Solon actually got from the Egyptians. Solon had traveled to Egypt sometime during his life, and Solon lived between 638 BC and 558 BC. So that was a few hundred years before Plato. In fact, they were separated, I think, by six generations it was. So Plato was simply writing everything that Solon had spoken about. To give everybody a little bit of an idea about Solon, Solon wasn't just your average person during his lifetime. He was an Athenian statesman, he was a lawyer, and he was a poet. So he was pretty well accomplished for his lifetime. He decided that he wanted to travel to where the oldest records were, which is the reason why he traveled to Egypt specifically in search of ancient knowledge. When he was there, he went to the Temple of Sais, where he learned about Atlantis from the priest Sonches. And the priest translated the hieroglyphics that were carved into the stone of the temple, which also described that Egypt was once a colony of Atlantis. So that tells me that Egypt had to be pretty close to it, or at least somewhere within a traveling distance for that time period. Now, the temple where Solon had traveled to was destroyed by what is now the Nile Delta. So basically, the entire temple sank into the Nile Delta. And of course, we're not exactly going to go in there looking for those stones unless you want to get eaten. So,
right. Yeah.
Solon took these notes that were eventually passed down to Plato, who of course wrote his two works about it. So, according to Solon, Atlantis had been destroyed approximately 9,000 years prior to his visit. If you go back to that time period around 2,600 years ago, somewhere around there. And then you're talking 9,000 years before that. So you're getting into an area of 11,600 years ago. Now, what's rather interesting about that time period is there is also the theory called the Younger Dryas event during that time period. And what the Younger Dryas event, basically what it boils down to is here in North America, of course, there was a ice age. Well, the Younger Dryas event may have been what actually ended that. And they believe it could have been a meteor, either an impact or an explosion within the atmosphere. But it wiped out something like 75% of all life within North America and caused all types of damage throughout the world. There have been numerous places where they've been able to track this. The Younger Dryas event is not considered to be scientific fact, but it is one of the leading theories of what caused that. Now, during that time period, what's interesting is not only did you have the mini ice age during that time, but also at the time that the ice age ended, you had a sudden rise in sea level. The point that I'm going to bring up about my idea of Atlantis is when you look at the Sahara Desert, it is a proven scientific fact that the sand of the Sahara Desert is actually from the ocean, which means at one time, the entire Sahara area was covered. For people that don't realize, the entire Sahara Desert is about 1.5 times the size of the entire United States. So you're talking a rather large area. And the area that I'm specifically talking about is the Rekat structure, which is in Mauritania, Africa. It's on the western side of Africa. And of course, a lot of people say, well, that can't be Atlantis because it's too far away from the ocean. Okay, number one, it's still in the Sahara. And like I just got done saying, the sand of the Sahara is from the ocean. And the other thing is, it sits about 1,300 feet above sea level. So a lot of people say, well, no, it can't be that because it's, of course, far too high above the ocean. But when we take a look at somewhere like Antarctica, people don't really realize that Antarctica is actually rising. And when I say rising, I'm not talking about the ice and snow. The land underneath of Antarctica is rising at the rate of approximately 1.6 inches per year. Now, if you take that equation and you apply it to the Rekat structure in Africa, and you figure it's 1,300 feet, so you go back close to 12,000 years at 1.6 inches per year, about 1.5 inches per year. And you can adjust even a little bit for the height that it comes up every single year. And it comes out to something like 1,500 feet. It's really amazing how close that is. So that to me is lending somewhat of a credence to the idea that the Rekat structure, if anyone wants to look it up, it's R-I-C-H-A-T. The easiest way to find it is to look up the Eye of the Sahara. And when you look that up, you're going to see this overhead view of it. Now, the overhead view of it doesn't really look like that much. But whenever you start getting into the details of the Rekat structure, that's when it really starts to make sense. Now we're going to get into a little bit of the detail, the Rekat structure compared to Atlantis. Now I'm going to use some of the old terms that were used by Plato in his writing, but I'm going to translate that to modern scale as far as feet rather than the terms that he used. Plato actually described Atlantis very specifically. He said that it was 127 stadia. nobody knows what the hell a stadia is, and I had to look all of this up. One stadia actually equals 607 feet. So if we take 127 times 607, you get 77,089 feet. That would be the entire diameter of what would be known as the city of Atlantis. Now, it's also very important to realize that Atlantis was not just that area. Like I said earlier, it's important to realize that even Egypt was considered to be a colony of Atlantis. So that gives you an idea. If Egypt is on the northeastern corner, and where I believe that Atlantis was, the Rikat structure is on the western side, that pretty much covers the entire continent of Africa. So I think that Atlantis was a lot larger than what people think. But these are the actual dimensions of the city of Atlantis, which there's a big difference between an actual continent and the city as far as dimensions go. So we know that the approximate size of the city was 77,089 feet across. Basically, the 77,089 feet equals 23.5 kilometers, more or less. It's just slightly under that half kilometer. So when you take a look at the Eye of the Sahara or the Rikat structure on Google Earth, you can actually take measurements on there. And when you take the measurements on there, you're going to find out, I suggest you do it multiple times to get the best idea of what it can be, because you know your mouse clicks aren't going to be exact or anything. But in doing it, the average that I got was 23.5 kilometers wide. So it is literally exactly the same dimension that he said. Also, when you look at it, if you envision it filled with water, you see the alternating water and land. You could imagine if the deeper pits were filled with water, it would make the perfect representation. You have the alternating water-land type look to it. Many other features also fit exactly in with what Plato had described. To me, once I start looking at all of these different things, even looking at the fact of the Younger Dryas event, if that is a reality, which they're pretty much like 99.9% sure that the Younger Dryas event actually did happen. So whenever you take that into account, and then you have this rapid melting of the water and causing the water rise within the oceans, it's very easy to see, hey, this is a real possibility of it. Now, one of the features that it says that Plato wrote about was he said it opened to the sea to the south. Well, if you look at the Eye of the Sahara, I shit you not, there is a break in the land that would face the sea perfectly, and it's on the south. You could just imagine it. There's different websites in that you can go to where you can actually play around with the depth of the ocean. If you raise that water level up, you can do that while looking at the Eye of the Sahara, raise the ocean levels up, and it fits exact. It just blows your mind when you look at it. He talked about how the mountains to the north protected it from the wind. There are mountains to the north. They're very plain to see when you look at them on Google Earth. Another thing is that mountain range to the north had flowing rivers. Again, very easy to see on Google Earth when you look at that mountain range, that there were all of these cracks and everything going around the top of this mountain. It's very easy to see that there was once flowing water through there. There are many things like that that I think contribute to the idea of the Rikat structure.
Yeah, now that's that's a lot of math work that you just did there. But it does. I mean, you know, it's not crazy when you think about it. It's not crazy at all when you think about it that way. You know, it's hard to tell what was covered with water back then and what wasn't.
Right.
There's been a lot of things that have said that the north of Africa has been underwater at some point in time. You look at the Sphinx, for one, the exterior of that. Well, a lot of those lines and everything in it have been made by water, rushing water, not just standing water.
If you take a look at the satellite image of that area from very high elevation and you look at it, you can almost literally see the path in the sand of the water flowing back to where the ocean is now. You can almost actually see where it is receded back. It's amazing to look at. It forms the perfect idea of what Plato was describing. You know, one of the other things that's there, Plato described that there was a plain, and the plain was smooth and even. It was a rectangular shape, and he gave the dimensions of that. Well, if you look just to the north of the mountains that are on the north side of Atlantis, guess what? There's a smooth rectangular area that it was very obviously a plain. And it's like, oh man, think off that list of 51 items that would be required for a place to be exactly Atlantis. Just in doing a quick overview of everything, I was able to match up, I think, 29 or 30 of those items directly to it. And as far as I know, that is the most that has ever been connected of any place on Earth to that list of 51 items. Of course, there's things that I don't know for sure about that area. For instance, I don't know that they worship bulls. I don't know that they worship Poseidon. I don't know that what some of their kings' names were or anything from that area. One of the other things that is rather interesting is that they said that there were three different colors of stones that were used in Atlantis, is what Plato wrote about. He said they were red, white, and black. Well, if you can even look right now on Google Earth around that area, you can see red, white, and black stones all around that area. So this isn't something that is, I think, just a possibility. I seriously think that the Rikot structure is a whole lot more important than what people realize. And I think it fits a whole lot closer to the description of Atlantis. Another thing that Plato wrote about was that one of the very important aspects of Atlantis was the center capital island of this concentric rings that they had. Only the center island had fresh water. The rest, anytime they drilled a well or dug a well, it was always salt water. Only the center island, only that capital island had fresh water. To this day, they know for a fact that anywhere in that area, if you dig within those rings and you go down so far, it's salt water. To this day, how in the hell is salt water still there to this day? It's 250 miles inland. So how are you going to get salt water? However, if you go to the dead center of that, there is a well there, and that well has fresh water. When you start putting these little pieces together, all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, maybe Atlantis didn't fall into the ocean as we think. However, if you take into account something like the Younger Dryas event, perhaps when the ocean started to rise, it was just simply because this happened so fast. When the mini ice age, when all of that ice started melting, it thawed very quickly. It thawed a lot quicker than what people think. they say that because of the Younger Dryas event, that all of the ice was gone in North America within 100 years. And that's really amazing when you take a look at it, that the ice in places was miles and miles thick. When you take that into account, that you had all of this water rising within 1 year, that there's a very good possibility that it could affect Western Africa like that.
Yeah, it would. No, there's no doubt about it. It could. You know, as far as that, you know, I think when you're always told, you know, it's sunk into the sea. I mean, I don't think that's right. I think the seas obviously rose at some point or another and receded at some point in time after that, and maybe rose again and went back down again. It's really tough to tell. And I think a lot of these so-called experts, I think they look too hard. I mean, because just from what you've said, makes more sense to me than a lot of the stuff that I've heard them say. And they've spent lifetimes working on this.
Using Plato's words, he said there was an abundance of metals, copper, and gold. I pulled up the gross national products for Mauritania. And when I did that, I shit you not, the metals that they were talking about, and Plato had mentioned it more than once, was specifically iron. When you look at it today, Mauritania's number one export is iron. 44% of the total exports are iron, followed by fish, oil, copper, and gold. That tells you right there, all three things that Plato mentioned as being the chief exports of Atlantis are, in fact, to this day, still the same exports of Mauritania. When I start looking at all of these different little things and you start fitting these little puzzle pieces together, it's like, hey, this does really start to make sense. There has already been some great work out there by people. The problem is right now, Mauritania, if I'm not mistaken, is actually on the do not travel list for the United States. It's a pretty rough area right now, so they're trying to keep people out of there. It's never really been excavated. There's never really been archaeologists out there. Like I say, it wasn't discovered until the 1960s.
Right.
You've got this data, you know, that's 50, 60 years old, and we've never had the opportunity to really check into this. You know, some of the things that they have found in the area where they've discovered multiple groups of elephant bones in the area. And again, that's something that leads right into what Plato had talked about, was the elephants that were present in Atlantis.
Yeah, and that, you know, there aren't any elephants in North Africa now, I don't think. Yeah, and I think, you know, there was a different climate back then, because everybody envisions Atlantis being much like what Greece is, and I think that's pretty close. I mean, for one, to having a name like Atlantis, well, that would obviously be some sort of a Latin word, which was. I believe that Latin was the spoken word in Greece at the time, right? Pretty sure. So, and you know, was there anything of a Greek empire at all? Or I mean, because ancient Greece is not one of my stronger subjects.
Mine either. That actually goes back, you know, you're talking going back 12,000 years.
Yeah.
Basically to that time period. And of course, you know, my knowledge of Greece certainly doesn't go back that far. I'm lucky to have read things about the Battle of Thermopylae, let alone go back 12,000 years.
Right.
You know, when you start getting into that, going that far back, that's, to me, one of the biggest disappointments of all of this, is that we lost all of those temples to the Nile Delta.
Right.
Could you imagine what that would describe I'm sure that not only did we lose the stones that were carved, but I'm sure that there were other items too, you know, possibly even texts that were lost. So that's just a tragedy.
Are you familiar with Edgar Cayce at all?
Yes.
Okay. Because he claims that there is a hall of records underneath the Sphinx in Egypt where the texts of Atlantis are kept.
Here's an interesting thing about the Sphinx is you're absolutely right. Edgar Cayce discovered this. He talked about the Hall of Records.
Right.
And that has been discovered. They know for a fact that there are caverns running all over the place under the Sphinx. You can get online. I cannot remember the name of the Egyptologist who they actually found a doorway that's up on the back of the Sphinx that allows you down into some caverns actually inside of the Sphinx. But there are other caverns with an entrance between the paws of the Sphinx that run underground. And those were what Edgar Cayce was talking about. The problem is the archaeological society there in Egypt will not allow anyone down there. There's never really been any Egyptologists go down there. And I'm sorry, this is going to be one of my biggest pet peeves, I guess you could say, with Egyptologists is, I'm sure you probably saw here recently, Paul, where they discovered the sarcophagus in the middle of the city, and they made such a big deal out of it. It was this totally black sarcophagus. It was really just bitching looking.
Yeah, I saw that.
It was solid black, had no hieroglyphics on it, which was very unusual, but it pretty much matched the size and dimension of some other sarcophaguses that were discovered. Absolutely pissed me off. I'm sorry. With all of the shady shit that's been going on in Egypt and Egyptology, there's been people who have been stealing these antiquities and selling them on the black market. It's a horrible, horrible thing. When that was discovered, that whole thing should have been live streamed, or at the very minimum, should have been on television, something, or like I say, just live streamed on the internet so that we can keep an eye on those damn Egyptologists over there that are robbing us of history, because they're discovering history, which is number one, it's kept from the world and it should belong to everyone in this world. We have a right and we have a need to understand our history. And we cannot understand our history so long as they try to keep that history from us by not doing things like live streaming or showing us what's really there. It was disgusting, but it royally pissed me off when they took the lid off of that sarcophagus and they discovered those bones and that liquid in there. And they tried to sell everybody on a bunch of horse shit saying that the sarcophagus must have leaked and that's what caused the liquid to get in there. I call bullshit on that because that sarcophagus was sealed. There was no water that was going to get into that thing. These things weigh something like 7,000 pounds. They're not exactly small and light. They scoop that liquid out of there and dude, they just dump that liquid in the street. Now, I'm sorry. To me, why aren't you investigating that? Keep that shit. There are scientists who will study that and can tell you exactly what it is. Because God knows it wasn't just seeping in throughout centuries. No. Like I say, it was a sealed sarcophagus and it was leaking in. But see, this is one of my big things, you know, and it's like, you know, they've discovered this other room now in Tutankhamun's burial chamber. They believe that there may be another pharaoh that is buried in the very next chamber. And the only doorway to it is this doorway, which sealed within Tutankhamun's burial chamber. And of course, they won't go into it. Like you mentioned, the Hall of Records under the Sphinx, they won't go into that. They won't allow history to be written the way that it should be written. They're going to feed you a bunch of shit. And then they're going to tell you, no, that's not real. Kind of like the whole idea of Atlantis, them saying, well, it's a pseudo history. Yeah, well, that's what you assholes were saying about the city of Troy, too. But we know what happened with the city of Troy. It was discovered. We know that it was real. So guess what? The stories of Troy that have been passed down throughout centuries turned out to be a real thing.
You know, experts think they know everything. And yeah. And no, the same thing, like what you say with all that stuff involving that sarcophagus. Yeah, that, you know, does it everything need to be kept so fucking quiet? And does everything need to be, nobody needs to know, or do they always have to disprove every little thing they find? I think a lot of it is not. And I, you know, the, and the same thing with the Sphinx. They don't want to disturb this, that, or the other. Well, you know what? The only way you find out things, to use the old adage, you got to break a few eggs. Well, it aggravates me that how they would disturb everything else over in Egypt, but when it comes to finding something like a Hall of Records, they're not interested in that. And I think it should be, because that could be a key to the existence of people, of man. If it does describe a place, you know, as Atlantis and what it was and what it was, you know, where it was and what it was about and, you know, who lived there, it aggravates me too, man, to where there's so many secrets that have to, that the people keep in this world that they don't need to keep them. Whether you're afraid it's going to rewrite history books, I don't know, and I don't care. History books are, they've been wrong from day one. A lot of the stuff that you and I were taught in school when we were kids, a lot of that stuff has turned out to be BS too. Now, I agree with you. I think there's a lot that can be learned from different things if people just wanted to take the time to go through the proper channels and get things done and have a few people on the other side that say yes instead of saying no. But yeah, it's, you know, it's sad because here you've had this stuff for millions of years and we're no closer now to discovering or figuring anything out than we were then. It's aggravating. I agree. You know, you got people like you or me that are trying to put two and two together and come out with 10, you know. You know, it just, it's amazing how experts just don't, I don't know. I think it's the way they go about things. They always have to have too much data for this and for that and can never look at something for what it actually is. Will we ever know the truth about if Atlantis existed? Well, maybe sometime if we can go back in time, you never know.
I personally think that the Eye of the Sahara or the Rikat structure so far is, to me, the closest example that I can find to match up most closely with what Plato was saying. I'm not saying that it is Atlantis, but there are so many little pieces that fit together. It really makes me wonder if it isn't possible.
Yeah, that Rikat structure is just, it's impressive.
It's hard to believe that we didn't realize even that existed. And I understand a lot of people are going to look at it and say, well, no, the Rikat structure can't be it because the Rikat structure is natural. Well, when you take a look at the whole story of Atlantis, I mean, my God, that's, you know, 30 miles wide or whatever the hell it is. That's a big ass area. Do we really think it would be, which is easier to believe, I guess? Would it be easier for them to find a natural structure like that and use it for their purposes? Or would it be to go in and dig all of that crap out by hand without heavy machinery and everything else? You're talking probably centuries just to build the damn islands.
I don't see how that can be considered natural.
I think when you look at it, I think there, to me anyway, when I look at it, it looks very, I think that you can imagine the, I guess you could say, the water coming in there. Now, the scientific data behind it more or less says that at one time that there was a thermal energy under it, possibly as far back as Pangaea, which caused the area to rise up, and then sort of like a cake in the oven, the center fell, which caused the rings to actually form. So I think there's a possibility that it was a natural thing and that there was possibly some work done to that. But yeah, I think it was pretty much done natural. And I think somebody was able to take a look at it and had a vision, said, hey, if we do this, this, and this, we can have this island sort of tropical paradise. Because I do believe, and again, there's a lot of evidence that shows that that area was not always a desert. So I'm pretty much sure that there was a lot of flora and things like that that would really sustain the people of Atlantis.
I agree. I think there's more to that. I think there's more to that than what people are even thinking of or boy, I'll tell you what. If anybody could ever prove that that's where Atlantis was, and of course, with it being in a country where you're not really able to go and look at stuff like that, that makes it more difficult.
Until we start getting archaeologists and that in there, we're never really going to know for sure. But like I say, even without that, we know for a fact that taking a look at that list of 51 items, like I say, I can match up something like 30 of them.
Right.
So you're looking at a very high percentage. You know, you're talking over 50% of the items on that list match up to the Rikot structure. And it's just simply a matter of getting in there. And if we can find one carving, say, of a bowl, that tells us a lot, or a cave drawing in the area or something like that.
Right.
That's going to speak volumes towards that being Atlantis. It's going to leave more credence to it. But I think that when you start putting the pieces together of history, this is something that existed 9,000 years before Solon's life. And Solon was a few hundred years before Plato. And that puts it right in that wheelhouse of the Younger Dryas event. The Younger Dryas event, I believe that there is a lot that we take a look at in history, and that to me is probably the single biggest life-changing thing that there is in the history of our planet was the Younger Dryas event. Of course, everybody thinks, well, the dinosaurs were taken out by a meteor, and that was the single biggest thing, because had that have not happened, man would not have evolved. But when you take a look at the Younger Dryas event, you know, you had this sheets of ice basically covering North America when the Native Americans first came to this country. Once that ice actually melted and it revealed the Bering Strait, all of a sudden they couldn't get back across that land bridge. It created an entire separate race of people. If you take a look at the tribes in both North and South America, it doesn't take a whole lot to look at it, and you can say, wow, holy crap. These are obviously from the same origin of people. I don't care if it's South American Indians or North American Indians. They've got the same complexions, things like that. They've got a lot of the same bone structures and things like that. Now they're finding skeletons in that to go much, much further back. It's crazy. It's something like 130,000 years or how far the bones are now going back in North America. And it's like, there is an entire other history here. And to me, it's not that difficult to imagine 12,000 years ago, there being this major event like the Younger Dryas event, which was probably a meteor, may have detonated in the atmosphere, caused the ice sheets to melt, and boom, you got North America. So there are so many possibilities to that time period that I think go right back to that single event probably being the most major thing to happen in all of humanity.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It was major. You know, this whole it's a tough subject to you know, because it'll frustrate the hell out of you for sure.
So once you start digging into Atlantis, there are so many different possibilities as to what it could be or where it could be. I've heard some people think that Atlantis not only is a fictional place, that the Atlanteans moved on and they ascended into the heavens with their alien ancestors and all of these other things. Antarctica, people believe that Antarctica may have been Atlantis. All of these other possibilities. There really are a number of different things, but I really encourage everybody to check out the Recot structure.
Yeah.
Like I say, the easiest way to find it is look up the Eye of the Sahara. Just the first image that you're going to see if you're on Wikipedia is amazing.
It is.
It really is. When you look at it, you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's Atlantis. You can see it.
Yeah.
But don't just take my word for it. Everybody, please research into it.
Yeah, I think you're right. If I had to put my finger on one place where Atlantis might be or would have been, I think that's where I put it. I really do.
I've looked at a number of different spots, and I agree with the theory that, well, Atlantis was probably in the Mediterranean. I totally believe that for the longest time. But then when I started hearing more and more about the Recot structure, I was just like, nope, that's it. You look at it and you're like, holy crap, that is Atlantis. You can imagine if it were filled with water, it would be the exact thing that Plato talked about.
Right. I agree. I agree with that. I mean, it's, yeah, the first time you see it, there's something that leaps out of it at you and it says, you're not just looking at some other hole in the ground, that's for sure. And it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit.
It's unlike anything else. And as far as we know, that is the only time anywhere on Earth that that's happened.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's ever been another spot like that anywhere.
No, I've never seen anything like it in my life. That's for sure. Nothing like it. Yeah, I think it could be natural and man-made both at the same time. Because, you know, the way things, I mean, you look at the pyramids and the way things were built back then. I don't put anything past man back then.
No, I don't either. And there again, this also fits into a time period that I think at minimum, that's how old the Sphinx is. Personally, I believe the Sphinx may even be a little bit older. And if you go back, let's say Atlantis was wiped out 12,000 years ago. How many centuries or millennia did it survive before then? Because I know when I take a look at the Sphinx, I believe the Sphinx is at least 20,000 years old. And that's only because of the rain damage and that has been done to the Sphinx. So we're talking Sphinx and pyramids and everything else may have been around that time. Although I think the Sphinx was there before the pyramids. And that's just going by the legend of the pyramids, of course. But I think that the Sphinx was probably around the same time as Atlantis, which who's to say they may go back 20,000-30,000 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I agree with that. You've done your homework on this one, man. Tell you, good job.
Thank you. Did a little bit of research into it. A lot of it, you know, of course I looked into the Recot structure before, so it was just kind of a matter of refreshing myself, I guess you could say, on that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It looks to me like there was obviously something there at some point in time. And maybe we'll get lucky someday and somebody will be able to go in and, you know, investigate it more and see what they can find.
Personally, I would like to know, too, what our listeners think about the Recot structure. And if they would like to, you guys are more than welcome to email Paul and I. My email address is matt@alienpodcast.net. And Paul's email address is paul@alienpodcast.net. Just go ahead and shoot us an email. Let us know what you think of the Recot structure. Even if you think we're full of shit with it.
We may be. We may be.
Send us an email and tell us. Yeah, we might be completely full of shit. I mean, who knows? I may be sitting here preaching about the Recot structure and somebody's going to say, no, I discovered Atlantis and it's actually Greece. Who knows? But I think the Recot structure is certainly interesting when you look at it.
Oh, yeah. To say the least.
Another thing, too, I would like our listeners to weigh in on is Paul and I have kind of briefly talked about it before. What would everybody think about if we started doing some live shows on Saturday nights? Would you like to be able to call in and talk to us? We seem to be getting quite a few people who mention things like that to us. So if that's something that you would be interested in, send us an email about that, too. Or if, you know, your cat is being abducted by aliens, send us an email about that.
But we need pictures of the cat, too, though.
And the alien, preferably.
Well, yeah.
And also, if you have any ideas or things that you would like to hear us talk about, send those over to us.
Yep.
What the hell? Send us an email about anything.
Yep. We'll be more than happy to bash any subject you want to throw in front.
If we don't bash it, we'll at least massacre it and go off on completely different tangents or something.
Well, we can do that, too. That'll end it for tonight, for this episode. We'll be back next week to most certainly attack culture as we normally do.
Take care, everybody.
To find out more about the show, or promptly send your death threats, or for your free, no-obligation anal probe, please visit alienpodcast.net.